Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining us this afternoon for once again another edition of the SPME BDS Monitor. And this afternoon, we have the great privilege of having our own board member and expert on Iran, Professor David Menashri. David Menashri, I'll just give a little bit of a bio on David. This was sent to you, but just in case you haven't seen it, I'll read it. David Menashri is a professor emeritus at Tel Aviv University. He is the founding director of the Alliance Center for Iranian Studies at Tel Aviv and a senior researcher at the Dayan Center. His main field has been for many years academic research in is religion, society, and politics in modern Iran. Professor Menashri founded and is the first director of the Alliance Center for Iranian Studies. He was a chair of the Department for Middle East and African History and the Dean of Special Programs at Tel Aviv University. Over the years, David has been a visiting scholar at Princeton, Cornell, Chicago, UCLA, Universities of Oxford, Munich, Melbourne, and in Tokyo. He is the author and editor of more than 10 books and published numerous articles on Iran and is currently working on a book on Iran's regional policy. It is a great privilege for us to have David on the call today. His topic today is going to be the Iranian people between maximum pressure and maximum resistance. Let me also add a few housekeeping issues regarding how the call will work. Those of you who've been with us before know that the speaker, David, will talk for about 20 to 25 minutes. Then we'll open up the conversation to a Q&A. If you are logged in on the computer, you have a hand icon. Please raise your hand and I'll be able to unmute you. You'll be able to ask your question. You can also ask a question on the phone. And I encourage you to ask as many questions as possible. If we did not get to your question today and you want to email us, you could always email us at bdsmonitor@spme.org, bdsmonitor@spme.org, if we don't get to your question during the Q&A. There's also an option if you want to write a question on the chat aspect, and I will be able to read that as well. So without further ado, David, welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Asaf, and good afternoon, all people around. First, I have to thank you for organizing it, because after being over a month closed in my room, I now can communicate with the group of people and speak something not about Corona and these issues. And what I want to try and do in this short time that we have is to give some points about what is Iran, because I think that although Iran has been on the headlines for over 40 years now, almost every day, it is still in many ways an enigma. And I think that let me do some service to public relations of the Iranians to tell you that Iran is not a totally black and, of course, not totally white. There are many faces to Iran. And I want to put some human face to the Iranian side and also touch upon the key issues that I think that it's important for us to understand in tackling the challenge of Iran. I promise you not to speak about Corona, but it's unavoidable because Iran is also one of the main centers of this issued pandemic in Asia these days. So maybe a few words in the concluding. Let me begin with putting on your table three questions that I think are essential in understanding Iran. The first question is, we speak about Islamic revolution, Islamic terrorism, Islamic republic. Everything is Islamic today when it comes to the Muslim world. But the question is, when you speak about Islamic revolution, what was Islamic in the roots of this revolution? The wish of the Iranian people in 1979, when they raised against the Shah, was actually creating an Islamic republic. not to say Islamic Republic, that the one that is in power today in Iran. I doubt. I think that the Iranian revolution has its roots, like any other big revolution in history, on two key issues. The quest for freedom and the quest for social welfare. Bread and liberty were the two major issues that moved the people to go to the streets and demand the change of regime in 1979. If you go to the American Revolution, the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, you will see the same thing. Taxation and representation in American Revolution is basically the two sides of the same coin. Now, I lived in Iran 2 years before the revolution, the last 2 years of the Shah, doing research in Iranian university in Tehran. And I felt that the people really wished to provide better life to their children. So if this is the correct way to look at it, the stabilization of the Islamic Republic does not have to do with the power of this regime on the way they control the country. It has to do to the degree that this regime would be capable of providing a cure to the malaise of the Iranian society on the two issues of welfare, economy, and freedom. So far, they have not been successful. The second question is, to what degree the ideology of this revolution was Islamic? In what sense the ideology was Islamic? Well, here too, the question, the issue that we should keep in mind, that Islam is a huge ocean of knowledge. There is no one interpretation of Islam. There are many ways to understand Islam. Like Judaism, like Christianity, there are many ways, and over the ages, there have been different interpretations. To put this, the answer to this question in the shortest way, I can quote a leading Iranian intellectual, Professor Abdulkarim Soroush, who is now in American University, I think it's MIT, that long time ago, and he was revolutionary, he was with Khomeini, and he said one key sentence. There is no one interpretation of Islam. There can be no final interpretation of Islam. And there cannot be official interpretation of Islam. Even if this regime states that this is the only way to understand Islam, that cannot be accepted, because there are many other ways to understand. And to give you just one example, when Khomeini came to power, there were seven grand ayatollahs in Iran, none of them agreed with Khomeini. The number one Ayatollah in Iran was put under house arrest. The man that Ayatollah Khomeini prepared for it to be successor, Ayatollah Montazeri, spent his last 5-6 years of life under house arrest. So there are different interpretations and different ways. What we see today, that the radical interpretation took over and became accepted as ideology of religion. The third question is, to what degree the policy conducted by the regime today in Iran is Islamic, and in what sense it is Islamic, or faithful to the ideology with which Ayatollah Khomeini came to power in 79. And I can tell you that what happened to the Iranian revolution is something that happens to all revolutions. In fact, any ideological movement moving from opposition to power. In opposition, you state your beliefs, you say what you want to do. When you are in power, you can do only what you can do. With authority comes responsibility. And then you have to consider the interest. And I can say briefly that in any confrontation between interest and ideology, interest won over ideology. That, for example, they came to power and they say that there is no difference between Muslims, Shiite, Sunnis, Arabs, Persians, Kurds. Well, the gulf dividing between Arabs and Iranians on the it's usually called by the Arabs the Arab Gulf. The Iranians call it the Persian Gulf, and Khomeini said the name of the Gulf should be Persian Gulf. And it was suggested to him to call it the Gulf of the Muslims. He refused. The national interest is more significant. Now, there is a gradual deviation from dogma to interest. The question is how to deviate, how much, and in what degree and rate. On this, there is a major difference between different groups in Iran. There are groups that we call conservatives, radical extremists on the one hand, and another group that is called reformists, moderates, if you want, pragmatists is better term. These are the different groups, and I'll come to them later to say how they differently view what's going on in Iran. One point about Iran, which goes beyond the revolution. Iranian identity is composed of three layers of identity. One, there is the civilization, the imperial, ancient identity and history, civilization, from the days of Cyrus the Great. The second layer is Islamic Shiite in the medieval ages. Both of them view Iranians as a leading force in human history. The third layer in the last 200 years is the Western component and the Western influence. And people ask me, is it possible that the West would go back to Iran? My answer always is, the question is if it's possible at all to get the West out of Iran, because Iran, the West is in Iran. Look, for example, there is an Islamic revolution and they have a constitution. Constitution is Western principle. They have Islamic Republic, which is Western. They teach English to their children. And I can tell you, it may surprise some of you, the Iranian people don't wake in the morning and say, what can I do to destroy America? There is no such hatred among the people. And this is our main issue today, the people of Iran. A friend of mine who was one of the hostages in the American embassy in the early days of the revolution told me that even before the hostage taking, there were graffitis on the walls of the American embassy. And one of them said, Yankees go home. And someone added in Persian, and take me with you. So it is not that they really are, they said death to America, and then when they are thirsty, they drink Coke. So these are the different elements that really influence Iranian policy making. And in between the three of them, the people are very devoted, for example, to the imperial civilization. This week is the new year in Iran. The new year of Iran is pre-Islamic. The Nowruz belongs to the era of before Islam. When the Islamic revolution came to power, they wanted to eliminate Nowruz. They wanted to destroy the ruins of Persepolis. So one Ayatollah sent bulldozers to destroy, and another Ayatollah send people to present them. So they show you the different faces of this country. Iran is going through a long period of struggle to decide its path. Both between the traditions of civilization of Cyrus the Great, the tradition of Shiism or Islam from the 7th century, and the new era. The people of Iran are more involved in making their policy more than any other nation in the Middle East. Iran had two big revolutions, popular movements in the 20th century. In 1906, they had the constitutional revolution. In 1979, they had the Islamic Revolution. They had other movements. See, for example, from the Iranian Islamic Revolution, there was a students' movement in 1999, students' movement in 2009, demonstrations against the regime in 2017, in 2019, and 2020. And the slogans of this, death to dictator, calling to the death of Ayatollah Khomeini, putting on fire the pictures of General Soleimani, who was then killed in January by the Americans. So an accusation of the Islamic regime of the clerics, I think that honestly, the Islamic regime has done misserving to Islam because in the early days of the revolution, the people were chanting, Islam is the solution. Along the way, maybe from 2009 with the mass demonstration, people started doubting, is Islam the revolution? And recently, people go loudly chanting in the street, Islam is not the solution, or at least not the Islam that is being implemented in Iran. So this is, if you look at the voice of the people want to have to secure their children better life. Islam has been a vehicle. They have taken, in a way, I would say, they kidnapped the revolution, and the revolution that started led by intellectuals, communists, liberals, has come to be the Islamic. Iran has a wonderful civil society. I'm sure many of you have seen Iranian movies. There are the best in the Middle East, and they are very famous. Student movements are most active in any other country in the Middle East. Women organizations, I think they are unparalleled in this region. Books are being published as long as they are allowed to be published and criticizing the regime. The leading Ayatollah wrote a book by the title, The Greatest Problem of Iran is the Regime of the Islamic Republic, the rule of the supreme cleric. Of course, the author went to jail, but these people have been published. Newspapers at the time of the government has to ease pressure. I was giving a lecture long time ago to our diplomats in the foreign ministry in Jerusalem, and I spoke about at that time the President Khatami, the relaxation and the free press that was published, and I spoke about the newspaper being published. And one of the diplomats asked me, "Okay, that's nice what you are saying, but are you aware that in the last 5 years?" This was in 2001. In the last 4 or 5 years, 100 liberal newspapers were shut down. Well, I told him, show me another country in the Middle East which has 100 liberal newspapers to shut them down. It depends which half of the glass you look at. I don't mean that they have freedom, but I think that there is a struggle for freedom that typifies Iranian people and Iranian intellectuals. I admire them for this, and you see an Iranian intellectual making a point not to walk on American flag or on Israeli flag and explain this, that it is not nice thing to do to the Americans. And then if we put on fire their flag and trample their flag, and then we are complaining that when we go to JFK, they stop us and ask us questions. Of course they should ask the questions if this is the treatment. And this kind of people are in Iran. So is there freedom in Iran? Of course not. A good friend of mine, an Iranian professor, told me, you know, Daddy, they tell you there is no freedom of expression in Iran. That's not true. We have freedom of expression. What we don't have is freedom after expression. So take it as you wish. There is the degree of freedom in the midst of suppression that we have in the the regime views itself as representing Islam, and therefore they allow themselves the freedom to suppress any voice that is not in line with them, be it from the intellectual, being even from their own president, like Khatami in the late 90s, or Rouhani today, or Zarif today. So, look at the international sphere, we see that on the one hand, this regime is dedicated to continue with its slogans against the Americans, death to America, death to America, and America is being led by the great Satan. And the American policy, mainly in the current administration, is speaking about maximum pressure. And in between this maximum resistance of the Islamic regime and the maximum pressure by the American administration, the price is being paid by innocent people in Iran. Now, one should remember that America has done great services to the Iranian national interest. If you ask, if Iranians are honest and ask themselves, which is the country that has done the greatest services to Iranian national interest, they should say there's only one country, it's the United States of America. In 1999, American-led coalition crashed the military power of Saddam Hussein, against which they fought 8 years without success. In 2002, they went, the American, another coalition led by America, moved to remove the enemy number two of Iran, the Taliban of Afghanistan. In 2003, they came back under another president, Bush, and removed Saddam Hussein. In 2016, they got the best deal in history. I must admit, I was not against it, nuclear deal. At the time, there was no, in my view, there was no better thing to think, because the American administration has gone so far to accommodate Iran. But then what was the reaction? Khamenei went back and said that the call death to America is part of the DNA of the Islamic Revolution. It's sought to humiliate Iran. The day before the implementation day of the nuclear deal, which was January 1st, 2016, they captured American sailors in the Khal Gulf, humiliated them, showing American soldier officers crying because they took his cell phone for him. Go to Google them, American sailors in the Gulf in 2016, 15, you will see the way that they made show of this success, supposedly. Iran needs an enemy. And one of the Iranian intellectuals asked them, what do we do today when there will be peace, the terms between Iran and the United States? The only thing that you speak from morning to night is death to America and how bad America is. What will happen if one day we will have relations? They cannot tolerate having relations because America is basically, if they drop this anti-Americanism, I don't think what would remain from the Islamic Revolution. Now, to the demonstration, often popular demonstrations in 2017, 2019, 2020, and also the sentiment of the Iranians with this coronavirus. To go one step before the corona, in January, the Iranians downed an Ukraine airplane in which most of the passengers were Iranians. There is one thing, you do a mistake and down, incidentally, a civilian airplane, but they tried to cover up what they had done. And people went to the street with the harshest slogan that could have been heard about the Islamic Revolution since in 40 years. The same sentiment is today in Iran. when they knew that they have this virus and they did not admit for days and days, for long days. My dear friends, we all are devastated about what is going on with this virus. But at least the Italians are dying in hospitals. You can see videos from the streets of Tehran, how people are collapsing. This is the New Year Eve. It is so sad in the country. It comes with the sanctions that pressuring them. It comes with the lower oil price. The economy is in disaster. And I think that the people would come and ask their questions to the Iranian Italian authorities. The Islamic Revolution, to conclude, was not a success story. Of course, they have gained some power influence in Iraq, in Yemen, in Syria, in Lebanon, some of them in the 80s, later on in Syria, in Lebanon, and so on and so forth. But if you will note, it was not because of the attraction of the Islamic Revolution. This was mostly because of the destruction of the political system. In Lebanon, the collapse of the Lebanese government in the early 80s. In Syria, following the Arab Spring, the same in Yemen, the same in Iraq. The Islamic regime does not have this appeal and attraction among the people of the Middle East. But I would still say that the destiny of the Iranian regime and the decision which way to go, it is entirely in the hands of the Iranian people. They are set up. The degree of resentment, the degree of disenchantment that you see today in Iran, and on the top of it, the miserable situation with the virus. I don't know the numbers of casualties or the number of people that have got this virus, but they say around 40,000 people, and the number of casualties is around officially 3,000. It's too much. It is too much for this country, and they are now begging the world to help them. I, as one, would have been happy if the world would help Iran. Not because Iran is a good friend of Israel. They want to destroy the state of Israel, okay? But I think that we have now to put this human mask on our face and to behave each other in a humane way. If Iran appealed to the International Monetary Fund and asking $5 billion to finance this war against the virus, I think that the world should go with it, easing even the sanctions, provided that the Iranians would show willingness to change their policy. And before I end, I want to read to you one sentence from the manifesto that was written and published by Lord Bernard Russell and Albert Einstein in 1955 regarding to the appeal to block the spread of nuclear weapons. And what they say, and I quote, "Remember your humanity and forget the rest. If you can do so, the way lies open to a new paradise. If you cannot, there lies before you the risk of universal death." That is the day after the corona, that's the way we should behave. To put this, remember your humanity. In Iran, this question is not up to the people of the country. In Iran, there are now currently two trends fighting each other. There is the one trend is the regime, and the other one is the people. And I conclude by telling you about an article that appeared in Iranian newspaper 20 years ago, at the peak of Iranian students' uprising. An Ayatollah wrote an article in the newspaper and appealed the people, to young people, to follow through Islam and not to cross red lines. A young student answered a week later by wonderful article and saying, "Father, the society is young. We are young and we want to have good life. You tell us not to cross the red line, but would you to follow through Islam? But who is there to tell us what is true Islam, what is false Islam, and which means we have crossed?" The problem, this young student said, it's not that we, the young people, crossing certain unidentified red lines. The problem is that in the one-way street, you, the clerics, are driving against the flow of traffic. And I think this is the situation that I see in Iran. The regime is going one way with its power, with its tanks, with its arms. And on the other way, you see the people are coming. Certainly, the regime has advantages in suppressing innocent people with no arms in hand. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, David. That's for that intense and very comprehensive overview of where we are today. So with that being said, the floor is now open. And we encourage as many questions. As I said before, should you have a question, please click on the hand icon and I'll be able to unmute you. And you could also write in questions and I'll be able to read your questions. I see one hand up so far. So let me unmute Barbara here and see if we can. Barbara, can you hear us? Barbara? Barbara, can you hear us? Barbara, can you hear me? All right, Barbara is not, we'll try her again. We'll continue on. So David, while we're waiting for people to ask questions, let me take the prerogative as the moderator and ask the first question, I guess. And with everything you've said, and obviously you've put a human element to all of this about, you know, what actually is happening on the ground versus how policymakers and the media is looking at the situation today. There is obviously a great deal, even more heightened conversation as far as, you know, with the coronavirus and Iran being involved in some of these issues and bioterrorism and whatnot. What would be your advice as far as looking at Iran today for Americans and American policymakers as far as trying to project that message that you're exactly saying? We know there's a disconnect between the regime, the leaders, and the people on the ground, and this is still an ongoing debate here in the States and in many circles in Washington. How do we unpack that, or what's the way to do it in order, you know, going forward, you know, as far as there's still a big question today about sanctions on Iran and the finances.
It's not an easy dilemma. For example, the Iranians always claim that because of the sanctions, they don't have money for medicine. On the other hand, they use billions of dollars helping Syria and Yemen and other groups that military, or not to use other terms. But I think that, for example, some of the things have been done. President Trump offered some kind of assistance to the Iranians. But they are proud enough, from their perspective, not to accept it. I remember there was earthquake in Iran a long time ago, and I was the head of the Federation of Iranian Jews in Israel. I spoke with, and Israel has a very good rescue teams because of all the disasters that we have seen in our country with terrorism against Israelis and the demolition of buildings. Lebanon and other places of Israeli soldiers. So I appealed the Iranian authorities to accept Israeli help, and I made it clear that this help with tents or medical services would not come with Israeli Star of David or the flag of Israel. We don't want to have public relations. I didn't get any answer for it. Today the Iranians, President Rouhani wrote an article, I don't remember, I think it was the New York Times, I don't remember exactly which newspaper, appealing to help. They have to change their attitude. All that it takes from their own head of state, and the head of state in Iran is not the president, is the supreme leader. To retreat from this, you cannot tell the Americans that death to America in every corner, trample their flag, and then ask them that we want to change the situation. Unfortunately, this is not possible. On the other hand, on over 40 years, whenever Iran felt weak and they asked to change their policy with America, America did not accept. Whenever Americans wish to have better relations, like at the time of even Obama, the time that Khatami was president, and we saw that President Clinton almost openly apologized to the Iranian people for a policy that took place in the early 50s, helping an Iranian prime minister, Mossadegh. But it is a dialogue between this. The people don't want to listen to each other. So I think that the only way is to have European countries, intermediary countries, to speak with the Iranian people, convince them this is not the time to raise these issues and to inflame tension. It's time to extend your hand for friendship. And on the American side, I would say, similarly, I would say, you cannot say that you want to help Iran to overthrow the regime. So it's counterproductive. And that's what has been said in the last couple of years.
All right, good. Thank you. So we have a
few.
We have
said, you can topple the regime. You don't have to declare this is your intention.
Right. Oh, agreed. Wonderful. Thank you for that. So we have a few questions. So let me, I have a few that I can read, and we have a few on the phone. So let me try to, let's unmute Ann here. Let's see. Ann, can you hear us?
Yes.
Great. Ann, the floor is yours. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. So my question is, what can be done for the Iranian people so that they can have a regime that is responsive to their needs? How can they do anything, given the repression from the powers that be?
I think that I don't know if it would be acceptable by the administration to, in very general terms, to say that we don't have anything against the Iranian people, and it's something that has been said and again, don't mention the change of regime. Say, here is a new situation. This is a situation which is devastating so much for the entire world, including for the Americans, with this virus. But we want to try and help as much as we can. America today needs its own medical equipment for its own. But we think that together, they can do something for the Iranians, provided the Iranians are retreat from their this kind of general denunciation of the Americans. I don't think that the American administration, I don't think it's advisable, I'm sure they will not do it. Go and help the Iranians as long as they say that to America.
Great, thank you.
I said another thing, if this is a question that it depends on the Americans to a large degree if they get, the Iranians get funds that they requested from the IMF. I think it would be good the Americans would say publicly we are not against it. But asking the Iranians to make sure that the money is going to the right places.
Great. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, David. Let me. I have a few questions here that have been written in, David, so I'm going to read them to you. So David Shamoun has one question, number one. I'll read that. What exactly do you suggest that Israel do to help Iran right now, especially since Israel is also fighting COVID-19?
Well, you know, it's there are many things that I can suggest, but I am sensitive to the realities in which I live in Israel. First, we are devastated by this virus, and I hope there are new optimistic things happening, positive things happening in Israel, but I think the number of the people that have diseased is proportionally lower than the days before, and we are all concerned about the future. There are quarters of this city of Israel that people don't obey the rules. So it's one thing, which is the virus. The other one is another virus that we have, which is political virus. For over a year, we don't have an elected government. Basically from April, even before April 19. So it's over a year, we don't have elected government. There are now negotiations to form a kind of national unity and running into problems. So I don't think that Israel is right now capable of doing things, but I think that yes, in Israel too, we are not the enemies of the Iranian people. We are not the enemies. I don't care what government they have. The type of the government, up to them to decide. I care about the policy of this regime. And there are some red lines. The nuclear issue is one red line. The other one is go out of Syria. I would say also from Lebanon, also from Syria. Mind your own business. If they will be willing to do it, it would be a great deal. By the way, practically on the ground, even radical extremist regimes are mindful of the new reality. The tension in the region has declined recently because they know that if there is a disaster with the virus in Gaza, this is the headache for the state of Israel and the people in Israel. The same with the Palestinians. And I heard there are signs that the Lebanese are putting left in the military. I think that the Iranians are somehow not retreating, but pulling back a bit from their activities in Syria. Why? Because they cannot fight on all fronts simultaneously. We have to open a new channel to speak to the Iranian regime. And I think that right now, the Iranians are unwilling to listen to it. And that's pity.
Okay, so thank you for that. There, along the lines of the last question, Liron Karpati here has another question. I'm going to read this to you as well. And the question is, do the Iranian people believe that propaganda that the regime puts out as a result is a coronavirus, is a Western creation, or the differences between the goals that you mentioned before lead to distrust of the government and information among the people?
Well, the whole issue of fake news and all kind of in the Middle East, we are very, very much used to it. The people have all kind of dreams or vision about kind of hidden theory that someone invented. This virus was made by the Chinese. This virus is an American product. I don't think that the Iranian people really believe in it. I think that they can say that because of Americans, about because of the sanctions, we improved our relations with China, and we could did not stop flying to China, or they certainly stopped flying. Like the airline Mahan was still flying to China when they knew it's bad. And the voices are coming. I get so many in WhatsApp. I get all kind of short videos about what people say in the streets of Tehran. And I don't speak about the opposition in Los Angeles or in Paris or in London. I speak about the people in Iran itself. They don't trust their own government. It happened with the Ukraine airplane and immediately after with the virus. And people were hurt by their own government, not because of what they did, but because trying to cover it. And I think that this shows some maturity on the Iranian people. Unfortunately, the government is weak. President Rouhani is raised as president of number. There have been parliamentary elections in Iran, and the percentage of people who the turnout in the election last month was less than ever before in 20 years. Only 40% went to vote. Usually it is above 70. And the system in Iran is that the clerics, the clergy have the right to vet people that they don't want them to run for parliament. So the parliament today is in the end of the conservatives. The executive will be after the elections also in the hands of the executive. And it doesn't matter, even if it's in the hands of people like Khatami or Rouhani, they don't have the authority to do things. So, and the legislative is in the hands of the conservatives, the judiciary is in the hands of the conservatives. So this regime is totally in the hands of Khamenei. And the question is not when is the next presidential election, because it's really not going to change much, but when there will be change of the supreme leader, because the supreme leader, who is the target of the hatred of the people today, is still heavy concentrating all powers in hand, and it is very difficult to convince him to change his policy.
Great, thank you. So we have a very long question. I hope I'm pronouncing, enunciating names properly. So Wahid Hag has a long question here. I'm going to read it to you and try to sum it up to the best of my ability here. So I understand what you're saying. Iran is a plural society, but a nuclear war would be the worst. We saw that with the Soviet Union. And so the question that is looked at here, a nuclear war is not a solution, but participation in totalitarian elections and totalitarian state organs cannot be a state solution either. So the question is, what happens if a totalitarian dictatorship is driven into a tight to get suicidal and much more violent? What do you think would happen to the Iranians and to the neighbors of Iran if they go in that direction?
Well, I believe that these questions came from Europe. And my answer to Wahid is that we don't know what will happen. Today, I don't know what is totalitarian regime. How is the regime in Iran is being defined? Because a regime that is concentrated all power in hand, and the only authority is the authority of God interpreted by the supreme leader, I don't know how I should define this kind of regime. This regime believes that God has appointed them to protect their believers. They believe that they represent Islam. You know, in Islam, there is in the Arab world, there is a term that was coined by a Syrian intellectual in the turn of the 19th century that it's called Umm al-Qura. Umm al-Qura is the mother of all cities, the citadel of Islam. Usually it's being referred to Mecca, which is the center of the Muslim world. The Iranians today refer to their country as Umm al-Qura. What is the principle of Umm al-Qura? If this citadel of Islam, the center of the universe, is in danger, every Muslim has to come to help them. They believe that they are entitled to be supported by the entire Muslim world, and they are representing the entire Muslim world. While in actual reality, their neighborhood is not very pleased with the type of regime, with the ideology of the regime, and the division between Sunnis and Shiite Islam are worse than have been for a long time. The divisions between Arabs and Persians are devastating. We always look at how they speak about Jews or about Israel, but I can tell you the way they speak against the Arabs, the superiority that they feel about the Arabs. So we are now living in a new region in which there is also opportunity for Israel, for example, for the United States, to cultivate relations with the non-Iranians, with the Arabs. And in fact, Israel has now better relations with Saudi Arabia, with Qatar, with the Emirates. And I think that in terms of the geostrategic of the Middle East, following the Arab Spring, and I would say that following the coronavirus, the Middle East is not going to be what it used to be. So if we are wise enough and trying to find the common denominator and the common interest between the peoples of this region, live and let others live to be helpful for all of us. If we continue to spend the billions of dollars that we don't have on arms and fighting each other, the economy, which is in disastrous situation in most of the countries in the Middle East, is not going to survive for long. The oil money, which is the Arab countries and Iran, are benefiting for a long time. The barrel of oil today is around $20 a barrel. So I think that inflation, unemployment, look at the devastating situation of unemployment in Iran even before the corona. So I think that we have to help each other to organize some kind of understanding that we can take care of our own people first. If you say America first, we should say Israel first, Iran first, the other first. But my being first doesn't mean that the other one, other countries don't have the right. We should try and work in a way that the countries can cooperate and give hand to each other, that each of them will do what is good for their own people within their territories and not trying to establish new empires.
Great. Thank you for that in-depth answer. Again, none of these questions are short questions or have short answers, and we definitely appreciate everybody's interest here in trying to unpack these very complex issues. Let me unmute here in the time we have, just trying to be cognizant of the time and everybody's time here today. Dawn will be our last question this afternoon, and then we will continue. Again, we encourage everybody to send emails. We will hopefully continue these conversations later on. I'm just trying to be cognizant of everybody's time that we have devoted today. So let me unmute Dawn here. Dawn, can you hear us? Dawn, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, the floor is yours.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. And looking ahead in the coming months, do you think that there is a real and earnest sense of renewed dialogue between Iran and Western governments and a continuing sense of political and humanitarian cooperation as a result of a larger global response of cooperation to COVID-19, which has crossed religious and political lines? And if so, what role do you think education could play in promoting this spirit of renewed dialogue and cooperation?
Thank you. David?
Thank you. So I would say education is the key to everything. I have spent my main field of studies in Iranian studies was to study Iranian education system. But education takes time. And of course, we can start always with education, but we cannot expect it to have instant results in a year or two. There is a lot to be done with educating the Iranian in terms of education. Education for tolerance, for democracy, for accepting each other. I spoke about civil society. For example, there is a group in Iran like the Baha'is. They don't have any rights in the country, and they are being misbehaving or misconduct against them. I think that there is a slogan by President Rouhani, and I take him to his own statement. He said that he always wants to turn a challenge into an opportunity.
Yes.
This is the biggest challenge Iran is facing in long, long time. And let them come with how they want to make it into opportunity. They have to lower down their anti-American, anti-Western slogan. It's not a big issue. A president should come to the people and say, okay, we wanted to do A, B, and C, but reality is, I conclude by a statement by another leader in Iraq, Ayatollah Khomeini, the founding father of the Iranian Revolution. He, after 8 years of war between Iraq and Iran, he realized that Iran cannot win the war. And million people have been killed on both sides in 8 years of bloody confrontation. So when he saw the situation, he turned to the Iranian people on television and roughly he said, my dear children, I promise you war until victory. And I can tell you that it would have been sweeter for me to drink poison, the signing agreement of ceasefire with Saddam Hussein, but we don't have a choice. To make such decisions, you need a leader with, I would say in Iran, religious authority, political power, and I don't know, political understanding. I don't see today in Iran someone like him, like Khomeini, to be able to go to the people and say, okay, we said something, it was a mistake. We have to do now what we can do. And the best thing is for both sides. I think that I know that the Americans would be happy to speak with the Iranians. I think that the people of Iran would be happy to hear from the Americans. The regime in Iran, I don't see them so far. Again, when I say regime in Iran, I don't mean the president. I don't mean the foreign minister. These are the politicians who are not really the leading figures in Iran. The leading figure in Iran is one and only, Ayatollah Khamenei. And if he comes to realize that that's the way to go about it, I think he should do it, because I think that we will find partners, if not directly, at least initially with mediation of European countries. You have the Japanese, you have the Australians, you have the EU countries. that the Iranians respect, and they can bring the two sides together. I'm not optimistic that it will happen tomorrow, but I think that because of the new devastating realities and the harsh situation for the Iranian people, America will get back to its feet. America will continue. It will solve the problem. Iran, it's much more difficult. It's a country with 85, 90 million people. If the people have been disillusioned, this is the degree of disenchantment. Someone has to give them hope.
Yes.
And I think that, at least I would say, the West should not prevent someone giving them hope and maybe even volunteer to do things, not without any return, but with some red lines on the policies of the Iranians. Iranians don't need today nuclear weapons. Okay, you want nuclear another 20 years, do something. Today you have to feed your people. Mm-hmm. I think that the health services and medicine and other humanitarian support should be offered to the Iranian people with the conditions that goes with it.
Great. Thank you, Don. Thank you, David.
Thank you so much.
So our time is unfortunately ended, and you know, this has been a fascinating conversation, and I want to thank you, David, for taking the time to really talk to everybody here. It's really a great pleasure to showcase one of SPME's board members who is an expert in this field, and it's really great that David, you took the time to spend time with us this afternoon. Above all, I want to first of all wish everybody in this in these troubled times, everybody stay safe and healthy at home. And as I mentioned in our last call, and I'll mention it again today, we're going to continue with these series of calls on SPME. While we're all working from home, we're still working, and we're still trying to unpack all the issues that are relevant to the topics that we are tackling, and they continue to be on even if we're sitting at home. Again, if you have more questions after this, you could always feel free to email us at bdsmonitor@spme.org, bdsmonitor@spme.org. Again, David, I really want to thank you for taking the time to join us today with the time differences.
Can I say one word?
Yes, I'll let you say.
I'm sure many people, maybe people who are listening to us would join me to wish the Iranian people a happy New Year. And I think that this is the most important holiday in the calendar, and the people are in such a devastating situation. A few years ago, Zarif wrote Happy New Year on his Twitter to the Jewish people. And then he had some agreement with the daughter of Nancy Pelosi that asked them about the policy towards the Jews of Iran. But I think that to say Happy New Year is always harmless, no matter to whom you say it. And we wish them that they will see better times, and we wish all others to get over this challenge of the corona.
That's a good message to end on, and we echo that. Wishing a happy new year is always a good thing, and for better times all around. We will take that and internalize that. But David, really thank you for everything, and thank you for the time. Thank you everybody for joining us this afternoon. We will definitely continue in the next 2 weeks. We'll send that notices about our next call, and we wish everybody a good day, a good afternoon, or a good evening, wherever you are. And everybody, again, should stay safe and healthy. So thank you very much, and we will talk soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.